When I'm not hosting this podcast, I am writing books, but it is really hard for me to write when I'm at home, so I like to find remote cabins in the middle of nowhere to just hang out and write. But I hate the idea of my house just sitting empty, doing nothing but collecting dust and definitely not collecting checks. And that's why I'm an Airbnb host. It's one of my all-time favorite side hustles. Other popular side hustles are awesome too, don't get me wrong, but they often involve big startup costs. By hosting your space, you're monetizing what you already have access to. It doesn't get easier than that. And if you're new to the side hustle game and you're anxious about getting started, don't worry because you're not in this alone. Airbnb makes it super easy to host. I mean, if I could do it, you could do it. And your home might be worth a lot more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey guys, are you ready for some money rehab?
Wall Street has been completely upended by an unlikely player, GameStop.
And should I have a 401k?
But you don't do it?
No, I know.
Girl!
You think the whole world revolves around you and your money? Well, it doesn't.
Charge for wasting our time. I will take a check.
Like an old school check.
You recognize her from anchoring on CNN, CNBC, and Bloomberg. The only financial expert you don't need a dictionary to understand, Nicole Lapin.
Bad emails. We've all maybe received them, and we have all definitely sent some. But we can now put an end to iffy emails with a little help. And today, that help comes to us from Entrepreneur Magazine editor-in-chief and one of Money Rehab's favorite guests, Jason Pfeiffer. Jason, I am so happy to welcome you back to Money Rehab.
I'm excited to be back. I'm always excited to be with you.
So you were the first person I thought of when the show team talked about some of the future episodes we should work on, because it was about the good, the bad, the ugly pitches and emails we've gotten. And we thought it would be hilarious to read them aloud and talk about what to do, what not to do, what works as this kind of teaching moment for people listening to not write certain emails. And I know you save these emails that you get, and they are hilarious.
I save them in a folder called Bad PR Pitches. I've just dug through bad PR pitches for you. And you know why I've started to do this?
Why?
Let me take you back. Years and years ago, I was invited to be a mentor at this retreat for entrepreneurs. And that meant sitting in a room as 10 people at a time would come in and we would talk for an hour. And a lot of people asked me about reaching out to media, pitching. And at some point, their questions were so specific. What subject line do you write? That I just said, you know what? Can I just pull out my phone and just start reading you stuff? And the whole room changed. Everybody leaned in and they were like, oh, I want to know what's in there. And I realized in that moment that sometimes the things that are the most woven into our everyday life that we don't think about, that we take for granted, are actually really fascinating and can carry lots of great lessons for other people. Like, you are sitting on some gold and you think it's poop. And that's wonderful to know. So now I am happy to open my inbox whenever possible and share the mistakes that people make so that others don't make them.
It's so good because it's like you're spilling the tea. You're also, you know, showing us this sort of inside look. I think you could do a whole account, by the way, of just emails. Like,
that's
just
good point.
Fun.
There it is.
Unsolicited advice.
Dropping some business advice. I appreciate it. Maybe I will.
I think it would be huge. Like, I think just focusing on that, because they're hilarious. So you brought some.
I brought some.
Your favorite.
I did.
Can you
dug through? Yeah, I'd be happy to. Okay. So let's caveat this with everybody is reaching out to me for a very specific purpose. And that is that they are trying to get press in Entrepreneur Magazine. That's what they want. But this is relevant to you, the listener, who may not be running a magazine. And the reason for that is because the fundamentals of pitching me are the same as pitching anybody. And so whenever you're reaching out to people, you have to be thinking about what it is that they're looking for and what they hear all the time. And I think that all these emails that I'm getting are missing that mark in really valuable ways that we are going to talk about. So, okay,
yes.
let's just start with this. It's a really simple one. It just reads like this. Hi, Jaden. My producer says he'd like to book me on your podcast. How do we do that? So, okay, two things here. One, my name isn't Jaden. So that's a start. Always know the name of the person you're reaching out.
Yeah, it's one of my biggest pet peeves when people email me with an H in my name, like Nichole. And I get that some people spell their name that way.
Their name, but you don't.
I'm done after that. If you've misspelled my name, we're done. This conversation's over.
I've also gotten a lot of pitches over my career in magazines to just completely different magazines. They'll email me and they'll be like, Jason, I would love a feature in Forbes. And I'm like, well, that's cool. You should reach out to Forbes about that. Because maybe Forbes would be interested. But I can't speak for them.
But I know you. You would probably write something sassy back like that.
It's exactly what I did. I have done that. And then they feel terrible. And then I feel kind of bad that I made them feel bad. It's a terrible
And I feel great about it.
So. Well, that's why I do it, just to delight you. So, but here's the second part of this. Because this is the problem here is not just that they called me Jaden. The second part is, how can we do that? Here's the thing. I don't sell hamburgers. Nicole, I don't sell hamburgers, but people keep treating me like I do sell hamburgers. They think that I am a service provider. They think that they can come to me and say, I would like some of what you have. Can you serve it up to me? I would like a story. I'd like to be on your podcast. Now, let's get to how we do that. And the thing is, I'm not a service provider. I don't sell hamburgers to you, right? That's how it always feels like. Somebody's like, can I get a hamburger from you? I don't sell hamburgers. You have to understand how the people who you are reaching out to think and what motivates them. And to be brief about it, my job is not to serve the people who reach out to me. My job is to serve my audience. There's an important distinction there. I am always looking for what is going to be valuable to my audience. And if that happens to be valuable to you, the person who I am going to write about, then that's great, but that's not my job. But you're approaching me as if it is my job. You're approaching me as if the thing that I do is give you press. And that's not what I do. What I do is serve an audience. You have to understand the way that people think before you reach out to them. Otherwise, you will not even speak the same language.
To piggyback on what you do, people are assuming, or whoever wrote this, that you would receive, I mean, I think it's an important exercise potentially to put yourself in the receiver's shoes when they're getting this email. Like, what does this person think you're going to do? Oh my God, this guy who misspelled my name, his producer wants me to book him on my podcast.
Right.
Let's stop everything. That is going to make me get a raise. Because by the way, you also have your own shit to think about. You have a boss too, and you need to get your job done. And this does not at all help you do that. So
sure it doesn't.
Is that step just something that people should take and don't? Or is there another way to think about how it's being received?
Here's the way I think you need to think about it. People keep reaching out, asking for an opportunity. Let's go back to that email. My producer says he'd like to book me on your podcast. How can we do that? Which is to say, hi, you hand out opportunities? I would like one of those. But that's not how the world works. Don't ask for an opportunity. Be the opportunity. Understand what someone is looking for so that you can fulfill it. If you do not understand that, then you have no value to them in this exchange, right? It should not be a one-way transaction. It should be both sides. And if you don't understand the mechanisms of the thing that you're walking into, then there's no way that you can be valuable. You have to read the room. And these people do not. They think that I'm here to help them. Instead, they need to think that they're here to help me.
Yes. Okay. So can we redo this email? Can we rework it in a better way?
Well, we could, but I don't know anything about this person, so it would be very hard to, because what this person would need to do is understand the way in which I tell stories to my audience. What is my role? What am I doing to serve my audience? And then they would need to tell me a story about them that fits the way that I'm delivering value. And that's when I would see. So I'll give you an example, a quick example. This is one of my favorites. So the thing that I'm always obsessed with are, how are people making decisions that are smart and counterintuitive that are relatable to people in other industries? Right. So if I'm going to write about someone who makes a butter dish, what that person did better be useful to lots of other people who do not make butter dishes. That's my goal. so that you read the story and you think, oh, now I understand. Now I understand some way to think better about my own business. So one day, the butter dish thing, not random, actual story, I'm teeing it up. This woman reaches out to me. She's made a butter dish. It's called Buttery. And fun fact, Nicole, maybe you know this, maybe you don't need to refrigerate butter. You don't.
Huh.
You can leave it out. And then it's nice and soft and spreadable. It's wonderful. The problem is that when you keep it in a butter dish and you lift the little top of the butter dish, you're going to accidentally bump into the butter and then it's going to make a mess all over the place. This is the problem. So this person made a butter dish on a hinge. So it just goes oop, oop, open and shut. And it's always in the same place. It never bumps into the butter. Wonderful. Brilliant. I don't care because it's not, I'm not running Bon Appetit, right? It doesn't matter to me. But then she tells me that when she was developing this butter dish, she wanted to do some market research. She wanted to figure out what would people pay for this butter dish? What would the colors of this butter dish be that they would like? And so she goes to a company and she asks how much it would cost to do this market research. And they say $10,000 and she doesn't have $10,000. So she doesn't know what to do. And then at some point in the near future, she is sitting at an airport waiting to board a flight and she's looking around and she realizes an airport is full of people who have absolutely nothing better to do than answer questions about butter dishes. Absolutely nothing better, but they're just sitting there. And the best part is that you could start at gate one. And by the time you're at gate eight, there's a whole new set of people at gate one. You could do this all day.
It's a revolving door of research.
Revolving door of researchers. And so this is what she starts doing. She just, also amazing thing about airports. You could show up whenever you want. So you could show up at 9 a.m. for a 5 p.m. flight. Nobody's going to stop you. Now you've got the whole day in the airport. Ask people questions about butter dishes. So that's what she does.
Get a ticket for Spirit.
Get a ticket for Spirit. It costs you $100. You don't want to get on that flight anyway.
And people love snacks, probably with butter on them.
Right. Yeah. It's true. Walk around, hand out some pretzels. People will talk to you. So this is how she does her market research. It's how she saves $10,000. And that is a story that love to tell. You tell me that story in an email and it's going right in the magazine.
Yes. And it's also paying attention to what you do. By the way, like this has no specificity on build for tomorrow, what your recent episodes are,
correct,
the crux of your voice,
nope,
what you're looking for,
nope,
the sort of innovations that you talk about.
Nope.
Nada.
Nothing.
Okay. I can't wait to hear the next one.
It's got nothing. Okay. Here's another one. Subject line. The next Elon? Question mark. And here is the body of this. All right, I'm going to skip a couple points because I'm not putting anyone on blast here. Hi, Jason. Count on one notion in tech, that innovation and the leaders behind it will never sit still. Case in point is, boop, the charismatic CEO and founder of, boop, a man who may be the next Elon Musk. He possesses the brilliance to lead a dedicated team developing cutting-edge technologies combined with business acumen and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, okay. So then I go on to read this pitch. And here's the thing, Nicole. This person, probably not the next Elon Musk. Like, you know, whatever. They're doing fine work. Fine work. But not the next Elon Musk. And this, I think, is a giant mistake. I call it story inflation. And I think that we need to stop it. Because if I told you, Nicole, if we had never met, and before we met, I told you, Nicole, I am a giant of a man. I have a hard time fitting into doors. I am so large. And then you met me and I was 5'7". You would think this guy is very small. But if we had met and I had not said that to you, if I hadn't said anything about my height, you wouldn't have thought anything about it, right? The problem is that when we inflate our story, we actually look really small in comparison to our story. Don't overhype yourself. Instead, figure out what actually makes you distinct now. What can you pay off on? What does somebody not need to have some crazy imagination or believe in 10 steps of hypothesis in order to think that you're great? You're great now, but you're great on something else. So tell me that instead of trying to hype yourself up. I think people often think that they're up against so much noise that they must inflate themselves in order to break through. But I'm telling you, all you do is set yourself up for disappointment because you do not live up to whatever crazy story you're telling. Tell the real story and find the most compelling way to do it.
Yes, 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 yes. It's like the adage, you know, if you're rich, you don't need to say you're rich. If you're powerful, you don't need to say you're powerful.
Mm-hmm. Completely.
You just are.
You just are.
Hold on to your wallets, boys and girls. Money Rehab will be right back. Money Rehabbers, you have money hidden in your house. Yeah, just hiding there in plain sight. Okay, so I don't mean you have gold bars hidden somewhere in walls, treasure map style, but you do have a money-making opportunity that you're just leaving on the table if you're not hosting on Airbnb. It's one of my all-time favorite side hustles. By hosting your space, you are monetizing what you already own. It doesn't get easier than that. For me, hosting on Airbnb has always been a no-brainer. When I first signed up, I remember thinking to myself, "Self, you pay a lot of money for your house. It is time that house returned the favor." And to get real with you for a sec, I felt so much guilt before treating myself on vacation because traveling can be so expensive. But since hosting on Airbnb, I feel zero stress for treating myself to a much needed vacation because having Airbnb guests stay at my house when I'm traveling helps offset the cost of my travel. So it's such a win-win. I mean, if I could do it, you could do it. And your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. Do you ever get FOMO, fear of missing out? Well, do you ever get FOMO-tupita, fear of missing out on the perfect hire? If so, I have the antidote. It's LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In any given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites, and that adds up to a serious squad of awesome candidates. LinkedIn has over a billion professionals on the platform, and these candidates are super qualified. So much so that 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within just 24 hours. I work with LinkedIn Jobs for all of my dreams. Dream Team needs, so they're hooking up Money Rehabbers at linkedin.com/MNN. Go there and you can post your job for free. That's linkedin.com/MNN, as in Money News Network, to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. Now for some more Money Rehab. Okay, so how would you redo this email?
I would focus on the really interesting, surprising thing that this person has done to build this business. Because again, if you're pitching me, you better understand what I specifically am looking for. The best thing that you can do if you're reaching out to anybody is understand them down to an individual level. So there is a pitch that you could write that you could send to me and all of my competitors, me, an editor at Inc., an editor at Fast Company, Forbes, Fortune, whatever. But you will have a lot more success if you spend time understanding how each of those publications are telling stories, because that way you can write a pitch that is different to each of them. And again, I want to stress, this is not just about press, because you could take that and apply it to anything. If you're applying for a job, yes, you could write one basic cover letter and send it everywhere, but you will have a lot more success if you get to know the company that you're reaching out to and then write a more customized version of that letter. The more specific you can be, the more that you can broadcast that I understand you, the more that somebody is going to perk up and say, "Oh, you understand me?" Well, then you're probably going to be more valuable than all the people who I heard who don't understand me.
That's a really interesting and important point, because I think the impetus is to send as many emails as possible. Like, I sent 200 pitches out today, and the ROI would be way better if you sent out 20 or even two.
Totally.
So, and that success rate, you know, so size doesn't matter.
I see where you're going.
In terms of quantity of emails, pitching yourself for press, pitching yourself for a job, or pitching whatever. I think that the percentage of success would probably increase the more that overall number decreases.
I think that the smartest publicists are the ones that I hear the least frequently from. The people who reach out to me, who really understand the publication, are the ones who are only going to reach out when they feel like they've got a bullseye. And as a result, they are training me to associate their name with quality. Because every time we reach out to somebody, we are training them Every single time, every interaction that we have, we are training people. We are training them for how to react to us. And you could either train someone to associate your name with mass amounts of garbage, or you could associate the name with quality, with the only time that you're going to hear from me is when I've got something really good for you. Not just press. This is, you and I both have friends who sometimes... You've got a friend who every time you hear from them, it's some other crazy drama thing. And it means that when you see them calling your cell phone, you're like, oh, no, I don't have time for that. And then there are people who, if they call, it's because, boy, they got something to tell you and it's going to be good. And you're going to pick up that phone, right? You're training people every single time. So be mindful about the thing that you're broadcasting about yourself.
For today's tip, you can take straight to the bank. Here's one last piece of advice. Chill with the exclamation points. With your friends, sure. Go exclamation point crazy. But keep it classy at work or you'll come across looking childish or immature. I know you are so excited by all the amazing things you're doing, but keep that excitement to yourself and show it with one little but very powerful exclamation point. Rehab is a production of iHeartRadio. I'm your host, Nicole Lappin. Our producers are Morgan Lavoy and Mike Coscarelli. Executive producers are Nikki Etor and Will Pearson. Our mascots are Penny and Mimsy. Huge thanks to OG Money Rehab team Michelle Lands for her development work, Catherine Law for her production and writing magic, and Brandon Dicker for his editing, engineering, and sound design. And as always, thanks to you for finally investing in yourself so that you can get it together and get it all. You spend my-